There are no gray wolves living in the wild in California. It's an easy statement to make, but it's not always true, because the radio-collared gray wolf known as OR7 occasionally wanders across the state line. OR7 is an Oregon native. The OR in his name was a good clue. He wandered away from his birth pack in northeastern Oregon a couple of years ago, and he continues to tromp around our part of the state, well, states when you include the California rambles. The wolf is in search of a mate, and there's no evidence any potential mates are nearby. So what's up with OR7, and what are his prospects? For that, we turn to Russ Morgan, who's the Wolf Program Coordinator at the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Russ, thanks for joining us once again.
Good morning.
What's the tag you usually use? OR7 or Journey is the name that some people have applied to him as well. What do you prefer?
Well, Journey is a name applied by others. We tend to just refer to our wolves by number, just because essentially they're data sources for us as we monitor Oregon's wolf population.
So back to the beginning of the story for most people. I mean, how unusual is it for a wolf to set out this far from his birth pack?
Well, most wolves disperse from their birth packs, as do most wild animals, and wolves are no different. And so as they become adults oftentimes, and they set out and up until now, you know, we haven't always had a great understanding for how these dispersals work. And, of course, GPS collars have changed some of that. The idea that this wolf has traveled this distance is not unheard of. There's been many wolves in the past that have traveled similar distances.
All right, so nobody should get the idea that OR7 is some sort of, you know, great vagabond. The fact is that any wolf of his age would probably do the same thing?
Well, certainly, you know, his dispersal and the distance of his dispersal to get to where he is now from where he was from his natal site is further than the average dispersal distance. But it's certainly not too surprising, no.
And where is OR7 these days?
Well, he's been kind of traipsing around the southwest corner of Klamath County and southeast corner of Jackson County, back and forth. So he's spent he's really not in any one particular place for all that long. He just kind of travels all around. He's got a fairly large area.
And is his wandering zone just a little bit bigger than some wolves, maybe? Or again, do we know that much? Because the GPS collars are how recent?
Well, the GPS collar technology is really been in heavy use over the last 7 or 8 years, even though the technology is a little bit older. It's much the same technology that's in a handheld GPS unit. The difference is that these collars actually have two-way communications with a satellite, which is how we get the data. So it's a fairly new application, and is still being developed at this time.
And so, Russ, January and February, I understand that our wolf mating season, is it right?
It is, yes.
Any idea why the biological urge this time of year? It's not like the weather is generally pretty great for amorous adventures in January and February.
Well, it may not be great for human adventures, but really the wintertime is a good time for many of our carnivores, and wolves are no different. They function fairly well in the wintertime.
By now, I will take a wild guess that OR7 has noticed that there's a lack of other wolves to interact with.
Well, I suppose, though it's commonly referred to, and I hear much talk, of course, of the search to find a mate. My guess is, if we really boil it down biologically and realistically, OR7 is probably trying to do a couple of things, and one is to keep fed and stay alive, and the other is to stay out of the way of people. I think the idea that he's searching for a mate may be a little bit of a convenience on our part, as well, rather than the wolf.
Sort of a romantic human idea.
I suppose, yeah.
Well, let's talk about the idea of him keeping out of the way of people. I mean, he's covered so much distance. Did I understand that he actually got into the state of Nevada for a little bit?
No, he never did go to Nevada.
All right, but just far down in California. So how close has he come to general human habitation? Is he usually pretty far off the beaten path for humans?
Well, you know, the way our landscape is developed with highways, cities, roads, rivers, that type of thing, you know, it's inevitable that virtually all wolves, and OR7 is not any different, that they come in contact with humans at some point. You know, they have to cross a highway here. OR7, in fact, had crossed Interstate 5 a couple of times, not recently. But so, you know, there's that type of proximity. It's not necessarily contact, but it's proximity to humans. And In a landscape such as ours, whether it's Northern California or Southern Oregon, there's just very few places where there's very large, remote, backcountry expanses, and therefore, you know, from a relative standpoint, the wolf is regularly in proximity to humans, even though he still is out, you know, in some pretty wild country.
Russ Morgan's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the Wolf Program Coordinator at the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, ODFW. We're talking about OR7, Oregon's Wandering Wolf, tracked by GPS collar. You can join us here in the Exchange as we talk about this particular wolf or the wolf program a little more broadly. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. It occurs to me to ask, Russ, if OR7 is a particular help or hindrance to anything you're trying to do with the wolf program. I mean, does he help publicize that wolves are out there and what they're doing? Does too much publicity on one wolf take attention away from the program generally?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, and it's a question that we didn't really have to answer too awful many times before the advent of GPS collars. And the idea that now we have this wolf that has traveled to another area and that information is known kind of presents a whole new set of circumstances. So, you know, the wolf itself, a lone wolf, and he's really doing what many wolves do, and that is live by themselves and not really interact with other wolves or even have that opportunity. The wolf itself is not particularly special biologically. In fact, I think we have to be realistic. Many of these lone wolves live out their lives, die, and that's just how it works. If it didn't, if you could imagine, there would be wolves in every corner of, you know, of our country, and there's not. And so at the same time, it is interesting that the collar itself has provided this window, this public window, if you will, to look into the life of this animal. Biologists now can look into the life of this animal and have such access to what it's doing. So it is interesting how publicized it has become. On one hand, it's been nice to see the interest, and it is nice to see interest in many of our wildlife species. At the same time, the knowledge that we have of the wolf, you know, we have to be careful about not loving some of these animals to death or to where it's a problem, if you will.
Well, loving them to death, I can understand. I mean, there is you're a little, not to say obtuse, but you're trying not to give too much specific information about where OR7 is at any given time. Is that
well,
correct?
We do. That's correct. And I suppose that's from a couple of opposite reasons. And one is, of course, there's folks that may not have the best intentions for wolves. There's people out there on one polar extreme that very much do not like them. On the other hand, there's people that do like them so much that knowledge of where the wolf is actually may affect how that wolf interacts on with the landscape. And so it's kind of important with some of these T&E species. Wolf isn't an overly sensitive animal. At the same time, you know, they don't like to be around humans as well. So really, just because we have this information, allowing that to become public on a regular basis would probably not do the wolf very well.
So expand the zone for us just a little bit here, because if we're able to track generally the movements of OR7, how many other wolves are there with GPS collars in various Oregon packs that you're able to track the movements of?
Well, I believe, I haven't counted recently, I believe we're tracking 10 right now. We've put on 23 collars on Oregon wolves. There's an OR23 out there. We've captured other wolves. Some of those we haven't collared, and some wolves we've collared multiple times. But right now, the list is at 23, and of course, with dispersals and mortalities and collar failures, not all of those collars are still on wolves are still functioning. So right now, I think around 10.
And then similar movements for the other 9?
Yeah, or 7 certainly is still one of the further, but we have wolves that have dispersed to Idaho, several wolves, and at fairly great distances, and then others that have dispersed at shorter distances. And many of the wolves, of course, are still within their natal pack. We try to keep collars, and our wolf plan that Oregon operates under talks about keeping collars within packs as a way to monitor that pack and count production and look at how they use their home range, things like that.
Which brings us back to a story about how gray wolves got back into Oregon in the first place. They were not placed here, is that correct?
They were not reintroduced. There was a fear, of course, and still some discussion by some that they were, but in fact they weren't. We genetic test all of the wolves that we capture, and so far all of the wolves captured to date have originated from Idaho, reintroduced populations from Idaho. That's not unexpected. If you'll remember, we were told by experts many, many years ago that undoubtedly Oregon would have wolves as the northern Rocky Mountain population expands. And, of course, we now know the experts were right.
But there are some significant physical barriers to wolves getting from Idaho to Oregon, aren't there?
Well, they appear to be physical barriers, at least to us, but I think in most cases we've learned clearly that that's not the case. The Snake River would be one, certainly a barrier or a potential barrier for from Idaho. At the same time, if we look at some of our data, we see clearly that the wolves cross the Snake River without any problem at all. So interstates also seem to be, busy interstates especially, seem to be present some sort of a barrier as well. We can see on the data, you know, how these wolves will be near a road, but they'll be reluctant to cross it. And then sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. They go the other way.
Interesting. So sometimes they'll come up against the freeway and say, forget it, not cross.
Yeah, anything. Sometimes the barriers that we provide are more of a barrier than, you know, wolves are incredible swimmers, so water bodies really aren't a factor. And, of course, we also know that we've had some mortality from highways as well. So that potentially an issue.
So do we know if a wolf is going to do something like swim the Snake River, which does not have insignificant currents, I'm sure, is it a pretty hungry wolf looking for a new food source, new food territory?
No, I don't think so. I think the drive to disperse or to travel, you know, we have one pack now that regularly crosses back and forth. And it's just, I think they view that water differently than we do. It's just not a barrier at all. They're such incredible swimmers. We had one dispersing wolf cross a large water body, you know, roughly a half mile across. So that's quite a swim, and probably didn't think much about it.
Well, Russ Morgan's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Wolf Program Coordinator for Oregon Fish and Wildlife. We're talking about OR7 somewhat specifically and wolves more generally. The old pack in eastern Oregon that OR7 came from, what's been happening with those wolves and livestock? There have been some incidents, haven't there?
Well, there have. OR pack was his natal pack, or OR7, I'm sorry, his natal pack was the Imnaha, and that pack still occurs. It's expanded and contracted over the years. It has been involved with depredation, not particularly any known recently, but periodic depredations have continued to occur, and we're still concerned about that pack, given where they stay.
Has there been some take allowed then?
We removed two wolves back in summer of 2011. There hasn't been any take of wolves since that time. Many people are aware that we underwent some litigation and have since come out of that with a bit of a new rule about lethal take on how it would take place, new rules, new legislation. So there's sort of a new deal in Oregon when it comes to lethal take of depredating wolves.
And so what are some of the basics of it? What's the basic thrust here?
The basic thrust or the agreement that was made was a higher level of reliance on non-lethal measures before lethal control could be considered. Lethal control of problem wolves is an important part of wolf management. I think in a developed landscape, I think many people will agree there's going to be places where wolves will be that just is not very compatible with humans. And so lethal control as an option is important. However, these new rules really go on then to say, what are the specific things that must be done, and really they're quite detailed, non-lethally, before lethal control is even an option.
Got about 2 minutes left. We'll see if we can fit in a call from John and Vanita. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Russ Morgan from Oregon Fish and Wildlife.
Good morning, guys. Russ, hi. I got a question for you.
Sure.
I don't know how long you've been around Oregon or around your job here, and if you're part of this part of the state, you know, down here at Jefferson, the state of Jefferson area. But I'm up here in Eugene area, and one day I got up and I read the paper, and I seen this article. I read it, and it was about these two Forest Service guys down there. I think they're in the Siskiyou's and Oregon side, And they were getting ready to go to work. They pulled up in a pickup, and they were, you know, like changing from your sneakers to your work boots and all this. And one guy looks up over the dash, and there's like five or half dozen wolves.
Uh-huh.
Right there. I mean, right there.
Right.
They had a camera.
Mm-hmm.
They took a picture. This was in the paper. And they went immediately back, I guess, and brought the posse back, and they investigated, looked, they seen the tracks. And all that, and so there was people come up seeing all this, and they went back, and then they assessed the photographs, developed them. This is 10, 15 years ago, I believe, and determined that these were very large animals and that they were, in fact, wolves.
Sure.
All right.
Now, do you remember that?
Well, I don't remember it. I have been in Oregon most of my life, so but not really in that part. I will say, however, that there's been varying reports of wolf activity, good reports as well, with information throughout time. And so one of our jobs really, and as we've seen with OR7, it's certainly possible for a wolf to be about anywhere. If we've learned anything, it's that. And so certainly the possibility that wolves have occurred. However, I've always said it's pretty hard to hide a pack of wolves for very long. If wild wolves occurred in a pack in that area, it would be difficult to keep that or not have more information about that, at least in my opinion.
John, thanks for the call on that. So is there a chance then, I mean, given all the wolves that do not bear collars, that there could be a buddy, a mate, somebody like OR7 wandering around
sure.
in the same general territory?
Sure, and undoubtedly there are single wolves around in different parts of Oregon. I think OR7, really the value of it just sort of represents the ability to travel that distance, and there could be other wolves as well, you bet.
Do we have a total on the mileage he's covered thus far?
You know, I haven't lately. It's undoubtedly thousands of miles between data points, but I haven't added it up recently.
All right, always a good chat with Russ Morgan, the Wolf Program Coordinator at Oregon Fish and Wildlife. Thanks again for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're very welcome.
We will call the end of this hour here on the Jefferson Exchange. Hour number two, we'll meet Dr. Carl Alasco, a therapist. His book is Say This, Not That, coming up on the Jefferson Exchange.